Kick this thing off. Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Reputation Igniter. We are so excited for you to join us. Obviously, hit that like button, subscribe, turn those notifications on so that make sure every time we come out with new content that you are plugged in and ready to receive. Today on our show, we've got Nate Adams of HVAC 2.0, who I'm excited to be interviewing. Thanks for being with us, Nate.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Really appreciate it.
Of course, of course. And so before I jump into all the great things that Nate's been up to these last 15 to 20 years in our space, I just want to talk about, you know, the reason why we put this whole podcast together is to bring people in our industry, the HVAC industry, to the forefront to give you new ideas for ways to improve your business, mainly focusing on building a better, stronger reputation inside the community, both online and offline, and making sure that you are on the cutting edge of your industry so that you can continue to build a strong brand. And usually where that centers around is the customer experience and how do we evolve that. And that's why I'm excited for Nate to be on the show today, because his whole concept about HVAC 2.0, essentially the evolution, for those who aren't in that realm of, you know, the versions of things, right? This next version of HVAC can really solve and takes a different approach. And so the way that Nate got into this, and he's obviously going to correct me if I'm wrong, is he spent about 15 years in the insulation industry owning his own company, kind of putting band-aids and kind of, you know, solving the symptoms of a very large problem and realizing he wasn't really getting the traction and the conversion that he wanted to. That transitioned into him creating Nate the House Whisperer and trying to address that a little bit differently. And now the evolution to the HVAC 2.0, where now he's actually saying, hey, how come this isn't more commonplace in our industry, and taking a different approach alongside the homeowner to provide an actual solution that long term will deliver on the comfort needs of them. So with that, Nate, I'm super excited to have you here. And I want to, maybe we just start with, what is HVAC 2.0 exactly? So everybody knows what we're talking about, what we're referencing when we're alluding to HVAC 2.0.
The easiest way to describe it is a new business model for HVAC. So it can actually take a whole house perspective. Doesn't mean you have to all the time, because most clients frankly don't want that, but you can offer it and it's there. It fits in really well with what you talk about of creating good experiences. And the goal is for it to be a really good experience for both the homeowner and the contractor, and serve both of them as equally as possible. What it really looks like is software as a service, and we call it a technical sales process, because it's much more technically driven than it is. There's a lot of sales coaching right now that doesn't always feel ideal. It feels kind of forced, and a lot of technician owners, because a lot of HVAC company owners are former or current technicians. It doesn't feel great to them. No. So this is much more about client education. So you educate them and you offer them options, and you educate them and you offer them options. And there's no coercion, there's no forcing. And it's just a much more pleasant way to deal with your clients. And they typically end up really appreciating that, because you're also asking them a lot of questions about themselves. We all like talking about ourselves. Sure. you can suss out, are there other things they want to fix? And, you know, 85 or 90% of equipment sold is basic single stage stuff industry. And if that isn't just the right unit, you only have two small adjustments. You can adjust your airflow, you can adjust your refrigerant charge. That's it. If you chose wrong, it's probably just wrong. Like, there's no fixing it. So if you can help clients understand that HVAC is not a commodity, there's a range of different products, and then there's a range of different ways to install it, they tend to choose much better. So we see usually a flip from only 10 or 20% of higher end equipment to only 10 or 20% single stage basic equipment. That's usually what happens using the process.
Wow. Wow. So Nate, how did this kind of like, come about, or what was the genesis? And are you the godfather of HVAC 2.0? You had mentioned kind of it being like a SaaS, right? So like maybe kind of helping. And then you also mentioned like business model, right? So I think that's a big word, and that's a big like business shift. So maybe you can kind of unpack that a little bit, maybe make that a little less scary for the person who's kind of going, oh geez, I got to start from scratch. Cause that's not what you mean. Right. But maybe just kind of hitting on those points is like, you know, where did this come from? Cause I think that's an important piece to understand, like, hey, foundationally, you know, this comes from the right place. And then also like mechanically speaking, like how does one kind of implement this into their business?
Those are fantastic questions. So, to start with the genesis, like you said, I come from the insulation side. So HVAC was not native to me. My business partner who began developing this out, about 15 years ago now, he joked, well, at the beginning, Nate didn't know the difference between a furnace and a boiler, and he was correct. I really didn't. So I've done a lot of learning through osmosis. The Facebook groups are wonderful for that sort of thing. Like there's lots of ways that you can learn. But with my insulation company, we specialized in retrofit insulation, and the margins just aren't high enough there to be able to bring on somebody to help with sales. So you're going to be stuck. Like I never quite broke 400 grand a year in sales. And that's all I could do, because a typical job was $2,500, where in HVAC, your typical job is going to be more like 10 grand,
right?
Or replacements anyway. And so that was challenging. And like you mentioned in the intro, it wasn't all the time, but it was often enough that it really bothered me. I'd go insulate something and tighten the house up and get it where it's running better, or I thought it was. And then I get a call from the client. It's actually worse. And what the problem was, their HVAC was incredibly oversized already. And then with insulation, we reduced the load, so it ran even less, and it didn't improve. It was an addition in particular that is coming to my mind right now, where we fixed the crawl space. It was a really leaky crawl space. And actually, my cousin's house did the same thing, but I gave him a heads up that was coming. So how's the back room? He's like, it's not freezing anymore. It's great, but the rest of the house is kind of cold because the furnace isn't running as much. So it brought the whole house thinking into the whole equation, because if you have comfort issues, there's two sides it can be. It can be heat escaping the house too quickly, or it can be not enough heat or too much heat in a blast getting delivered to the space, and reverse for cooling. So what we were trying to do is figure out, can we create a process that we can teach people where you can be a newbie and you don't need to be super advanced and you can still succeed with it? Because in the home performance world, when you look at the companies in home performance, they have one very common thing in common. I feel like allow myself to introduce myself. A little Austin Powers there. But you'll note that they all have the entrepreneur who, if you remove them from the equation, the whole company falls apart. Because every decision ends up going through them. That's not scalable. And so you end up with the people that are really good at truly solving comfort problems, moisture problems, air quality problems, and whatnot. There's only a small handful in the country that are good at it. Yeah. And it's not scalable. And that sucks because lots of people have comfort and air quality issues they'd like to deal with, you know, the asthma, allergies, hot rooms, cold rooms. So we figured out how to do pretty advanced process or advanced projects and do them repeatedly. And we taught others to do it, but that was still too nosebleed at the end of the day. But we started with the really, really hard stuff. And we've been working our way back to the easy, where everyone else starts with the easy and then gets stuck when it starts getting hard. So that's a huge shift. So that's first principles. We went to the end and came back. But getting to the easy stuff, just a basic replacement, has been really hard to figure out because you don't want to close any doors moving forward to what you're offering, where it's very easy to slam a door shut. Like, oh no, you don't need to worry about that. And as soon as you say something like that, the customer discounts it and you can't hardly get them back. So you have to keep offering them forks. Or choose your own adventure, as we call it, but it's guided choose your own adventure. So, you know, it's like, so would you like to go to the front porch of the abandoned mansion or go around to the back to the basement? You're like, you know, I don't know that I'd do the basement. It's up to you. I mean, when you're doing choose your own adventure, you had no idea what was going to happen. And in this case, we're serving as guides to our clients. So if they have a really simple problem, or I mean, the simple being my furnace broke or my air conditioner broke and I need a new one, you can help them with that. But if you give them some basic education as to what HVAC should be able to do and what they can expect from different types of systems, they tend to choose better stuff because now they understand the differences. And then if they have significant issues, so we start off with four questions. Do you have any rooms that don't heat well? Any rooms don't cool well? Are there any respiratory issues, asthma and allergies? And are there any moisture issues in your home? And we have them rank that on a scale of 0 to 10. And if they rank low, they're free quote people. If they rank high, they're comfort consult, which involves a blower door test. And you're really trying to understand, is their issue primarily HVAC or primarily shell, like the insulation and air sealing side?
Yeah. Well, I love that. And I like what you're kind of talking about is that the scalability of this, right? Because I think there might be people who, like you're saying, are excited about it. Maybe they're owner operated. Maybe they're not owner operated. And they got a sales team, and they're kind of going, "Oh, geez, like I got to reteach everybody." And I know, and we can't really get into it on the podcast, and I don't know if that would be helpful, you know, for somebody listening if we're showing stuff, right? But I know you do have a software that makes this really easy, and like you said, it's kind of a choose your own adventure where you're kind of sitting there. And again, I don't even know if you'd really need like a really super seasoned salesperson, you know, a technician that understands the system well enough can ask these questions, and you know, it's a client filling it out in a way so that you've got a duplicatable, repeatable process to deliver a holistic sort of approach to them solving the comfort, you know, issues in their home. And so that's what kind of makes it scalable, right? As you're building this technology around this and, you know, continuing to evolve it. I mean, again, this is like the entrepreneur in me thinking about, man, well, that kind of streamlines it. And maybe you only need to have, you know, certain types of salespeople for certain types of services when you can really be leveraging your technicians better. And you're also, you know, potentially being able to get your technicians a little bit more engaged in the whole process of building the relationship with the customer. And so maybe what I'd like you to maybe elaborate on a little bit more, right? Because you were kind of talking about this, is that you're bringing the customer along with you. You're educating the customer along with you, right? Which is not a radically different approach, but not, I mean, usually, and I think this was you who told me this when we were kind of talking beforehand, right? It's like most relationships in the HVAC space are parent-child relationships, right? And you're trying to take more of a, you know, adult-to-adult relationship. Yep. So that you're coexisting in this space together. So how does that elevate the customer experience and set your, you know, like an HVAC company who is using the HVAC 2.0 process, like apart from their competition, like, you know, from a business standpoint, why might that be interesting and what are the impacts on that customer experience, which ultimately obviously would allow their reputation to kind of precede them, you know, I would think in a positive way, but, you know,
one would hope.
I'm not trying to advocate for negative reputation building, you know, approaches. So, for you, Nate, what are the different maybe facets of that somebody can think through in terms of why they might engage in, you know, evolving their process?
So I'll take one step back. You were mentioning technicians on the sales side. Generally, technicians don't like to sell. They like to diagnose and fix. So you get programs like the new flat rate, which at least gives people different options automatically. You know, so there's different ways of doing that because technicians generally don't like doing that part of things. So the people that are in sales oftentimes know basically nothing about HVAC. I mean, they're kind of like where I was when what's a furnace, what's a boiler.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a lot of serious newbies with zero technical understanding selling equipment. And the problem is, if you sell the wrong piece of equipment, you can't install it well. Mm-hmm. If you put a system that's too large on a smaller duct system, especially with the new motors, the EC motors, you're going to start burning equipment out pretty quickly. And there's nothing a technician can do to fix that. So part of what you want to do is educate clients on, we call it duct pressure, external static pressure, but generally you need to educate clients on a few different things. And you want to do it in a semi-automated, if not automated way, so that you offer them education multiple times before you show up. And then you offer them education while you're there. And it's not salesy education. You know, it's not like having what do you call it when you can't sleep? Insomnia. You know, good morning, and you're watching like some crazy show where this guy's like, it slices, it dices. Like it's none of that. It's just, here's the facts, ma'am. And so in offering genuine education and asking genuine questions, even if you're a newbie, and we really have been trying to keep the lowest common denominator in mind, because if we're going to see any scale, I mean, the big companies out there, they're oftentimes bringing in, no joke, used car salesmen. And so that it has a very different flavor. So if you just had a used car guy come in before you show up using 2.0, and now you're genuinely asking them questions, you're interested in what they're saying, and you're trying to figure out, do they have problems to solve or not? Either way is fine. And then you're offering them genuine education. That's going to provide a much better experience, and you're much more likely to get chosen by most clients. I mean, is that going to be all? No, they're still going to be your price shoppers. But most clients really like to be listened to and understood, and be given education that's not coercive.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do.
That's great. That's great. So, you know, looking kind of beyond that initial relationship with that like specific customer, right? Like why would you say it's important to adopt this framework? Because I think it's easy to kind of go, well, the majority of people, you know, a majority of HVAC companies aren't doing this. You know, why should I be a pioneer? Why should I be one of the early adopters in terms of like putting this into practice in my business and trying to maybe, you know, understanding, you know, maybe the impetus or the catalyst for this, given our new economy that we're kind of moving into, you know, why do you feel like it might be smart to, you know, maybe get ahead of the curve in this and starting to transition over to it, and what the longer term ramifications would be for an HVAC company that did adopt this HVAC 2.0 framework?
So one of the most important pieces that's happening right now is, I mean, it sure looks like we're looking at a slowdown. I'm hearing of high credit scored clients getting denied credit. People are getting 5 and 6 bids instead of 2 or 3 like they were. There's a lot more price shopping going on. We're coming into a repair more than replace climate, which it's a cycle. Like that, this isn't the first time. It's not the last. But where for the last couple of years, if you had a pulse, you could sell HVAC and make money.
Right.
I mean, it's, seriously, can you fog a mirror? You're in. We need to be careful with our opportunities for a while. So leads aren't there to be wasted. So we want to see increased closing ratios, which, you know, good offerings and good client experience lead to that. But we generally view making money as a natural outcome of good process, as opposed to the goal of a good process. So the goal is client satisfaction at the end of the day. And if you do that in the right way, you're going to make money. So you want to win more of the opportunities that you have. And also, ideally, you increase your average ticket so that your average profit per job goes up as well. So we're just trying to be not wasteful as far as that goes, for the business climate that we're coming into. But also, it's about providing much nicer experiences. And like you said, that adult-adult relationship, we're not talking down at them. They're not talking down at us. We just come to the same level, like, okay, so we can do this, this, or this. These are your ramifications. Here's the prices for these different things. What do you think fits you best right now? And if your options make sense to them, the odds are very high they're going to choose something you put on the table in front of them instead of choosing someone else.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, it's it, we've got to shift our thinking a little bit for the next couple of years, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think I like what you're saying in terms of the fact that, you know, in an environment where people are going away from, you know, 2 to 3 bid process to a, you know, like a 6 to 9 bid process, which as a homeowner, I'm like, man, but, you know, when your pocketbook is that tight, it makes sense to make sure that you're getting the best, you know, quote unquote deal, right? Or value for your money, right? And I think, like, let's just take the 9 bid scenario, right? If you've got 8 people, you know, that are all bidding a very specific way, right? And you're the 9th and you bid in a radically different way, you can't help but draw your, I would say, your ideal client's attention to you over everybody else. So right there, you're elevating that customer experience, you know, just from the get-go. And I think it makes you stand out. It causes people to, you know, maybe instead of it just being in the lineup of 9, now you're the 2 that they kind of liked out of the other 8, you're up against them, and they're kind of going, now they're kind of back to that 2 to 3 comparison, right? But, you know, they're going, man, your approach is different. I'm a little nervous. Maybe there's something these guys are missing, although their price might be XYZ, higher, lower, same price, whatever, as yours, that maybe there's something they're missing that somehow I feel like your holistic approach and the maybe not the rapidity with which you did it, that might create a little bit more trust in your brand, which would cause you to continue to stand out. And I think, like you said, rise above, even if you cost a little bit more. So maybe, you know, is this something, and I'm just going to ask like a tactical question here, you know, that comfort console, is that something that theoretically, potentially, right? You know, talked about closing ratios and elevating closing ratios. Everybody's excited about that, right? If you keep the lead flow the same, but your closing ratios go up, there's a lot more revenue there and profit that should come as a result of that. So can somebody do a comfort console over the phone in a way such that, right, you know, the dispatcher, the receptionist or whatever, whoever's answering the phone, office manager, right, they can in a way save you time, energy, and resources from going to somebody's house? Is that something that somebody could do theoretically over the phone, or at least maybe the initial thing to kind of just, you know, to determine whether or not it makes sense to even spend or send resources to that person to kind of do a full-blown analysis? What help maybe the listener kind of understand the process? Because, you know, we're always looking for efficiencies here, and it's not that we don't want to spend the time or invest it in a prospective customer, but if there is a way that this process allows us to kind of filter or screen people beforehand, like, obviously that's an advantage. But what are your thoughts on maybe sort of how one would tactically implement it in a business that might make it make sense, because, you know, they could see some, you know, gains on the front end from, you know, reduced manpower requirements, I guess, to implement.
Yeah. So we haven't built it at all for doing like quotes over the phone, because it is a fairly relationship driven process. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely been a lot of talk about this, and I'm not saying somebody won't crack the nut, but that's not something we're aiming at here. But what we are trying to aim at is by asking those 4 questions about hot rooms, cold rooms, respiratory issues, and moisture problems, you help people triage themselves to either do a free quote or to do what we call a comfort consult, the HVAC 2.0 comfort consult, which involves a blower door test, and there's a lot more to it. Running the actual consult's really easy. We set it up so that if you are decent with other people, you can follow a script and you can run a blower door, which I can teach you in a couple of hours. You can do a comfort consult. The report is a little more involved. What comes out the other side is a little more involved. But just touching briefly on the comfort consult, we do see some pretty nice numbers on that. We're consistently seeing 60 to 70% closing ratios out of that within a month. And because you are creating a tailored system to those people, over the next 2 years, we're seeing that closing ratio jump to 80 to 90%.
Wow.
People have to find the money. So like if you do a comfort consult, the odds are that lead's not dead. Where if it's a free quote lead, you know, if you don't sell it within a couple of days or a week, they probably bought from someone else. Mm-hmm. Comfort consult definitely pulls that out. And initially we were seeing about 30% of clients triaging themselves to the comfort consults. That's a paid service. So we usually see people charging between $300 and $1,000 for it. Mm-hmm. And like, if you're nervous about it, put the high price on it. You won't really sell any, you know, and that's fine because the offering is there. Like one of our principles is always offer more than what they're going to choose. Mm-hmm. So that there's always something else to go to, and you aren't taking full responsibility of what you're suggesting working. You always want to share that responsibility. That's part of the point of the education. Like if you offer people two choices and they choose one, do you own all of the responsibility for that decision?
Yeah.
No, it's shared, if not entirely theirs. So we call that responsibly avoiding responsibility, because we see all too often companies they're taking full responsibility for things they don't have control over. Yeah. So if you don't have control and you're not getting paid, don't take responsibility. It may not bite you today, but it will bite you.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the adult-adult relationship. Don't set clients up. I didn't ask if you have kids. I just have one little one. Well, she's 10 now. But when she was little, I'm sure you've seen this too. If kids have their hand in yours, physics don't exist. And they go and they do crazy stuff and just like lean forward and you got to go jump for them. Clients tend to do that to us as professionals. Mm. Oh, well, you said this would work, so therefore it'll work. I have full faith, but I'm going to hold your foot to the fire if it doesn't. So there's this challenge of constantly making sure that you're offering them options and sharing the responsibility and helping them understand what the ramifications and the costs are of various things. So I don't know if that tackles all of the question you were looking for, but it's a different mindset and a different approach. So we're not coming in as I'm the hero and I'm here to save the day. We're coming in as Obi-Wan and we're the guide, and we're going to try and help you choose the best path forward for you. And if you go out there and get yourself killed because you made a stupid decision, well, you went out there and got yourself killed. You know, we did our job to try and help keep you out of trouble, but you managed to find yourself in it. And one recent example of this is Tim Narr, who's in Lancaster, PA, kind of close to Philly. He had a client who went against his recommendations for the system that they bought.
Mm-hmm.
And a year later, they were quite dissatisfied with what it was. And he had a conversation with them, and he installed a new piece of equipment again a year later, and he got paid to do it because they went against his recommendations. So he responsibly avoided responsibility in that case. And the clients weren't mad. I mean, they were mad at themselves, but they weren't mad at him.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of result that happens by coming at it with a different mindset and using the process that we have.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's an important thing to highlight, for our listeners. Like if you're listening, thinking about the fact that, through this process, he built enough trust, this specific owner, right? That he built enough trust with this client that when they ended up going against his recommendation and then obviously, installing a system that was too small, right? Trying to maybe,
large, actually.
Yeah. Oh, too large. Okay. Too large. Yeah. So they overspend in this
case. Oh, seldom a problem. Seldom. Not never, but seldom.
Right. Okay. So that even there, right? The system was too big, right? They didn't achieve the comfort that they wanted. And as a result, they came back with full ownership of their choice, weren't mad at him for letting them do it, right? Because it was their choice ultimately, but they actually invited him back to install the proper size system, right? Because that trust and that relationship was there. I mean, that I don't think you can emphasize that enough of the difference in terms of the customer relationship you must have for an event like that to occur, and the outcome to be what it is, right? Because most people, I think it's so easy in today's day and age, and this is the world I live in, right? Is to write an online review and just blame, right? It's always somebody else's fault. It's never ours. Nobody takes ownership anymore, right? But when you build a relationship with that depth and that understanding and shared responsibility, or in this case, somebody else taking on responsibility for their own choices, that you really create a lasting, relationship long-term that has incredible benefits. So that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that anecdote, Nate. I appreciate that. So let's just, as we're kind of like nearing and kind of closing out here, kind of two more questions for you. One is, when should an HVAC company start thinking about adopting HVAC 2.0, right? I think it's easy to kind of go, well, I don't need to do that, or, you know, maybe that doesn't apply to me, but where maybe might somebody's mindset be, or maybe some roadblocks that maybe they're hitting in their business that might cause them to kind of be open to maybe a new approach? And what makes an HVAC business a good candidate for this, right? Is there a certain type of business that maybe is more conducive to this evolution, let's just call it, to the HVAC 2.0 framework that you've seen?
So near term, I'd say more small and medium size companies, because the larger companies, say 15 million and up, there's enough moving pieces and enough stakeholders that it's difficult to get buy-in. Because this changes your CSR process. This changes your tech turnover process. This changes the sales process. There's a lot of other things that it moves around within the company. You can start it if you're a one-man band. Absolutely. And one nice thing that it sets you up for is now you have a nice little process. If you bring a newbie in for sales, that they can do all right. Or if one of your technicians wants to do sales on the side, you can send them out doing bids. And because there's a whole bunch of questions and you can go back and read what happened, you don't lose control over the lead. You know how they ask questions and how the clients answered. So you've got a lot more accountability on that side. Where I would love to see it used more is a company that's, say, 1 or 2 million, where the owner's still doing the vast majority of the sales. And they know they need to take the tools off to an extent and also not be doing all of the sales. You know, it's time to delegate a lot of their tasks so they can grow. And that, to me, is really ideal, because what we're aiming for is technically excellent installs, which can only happen if a technically excellent install is sold, for one. Right. There's a whole technical training side of it as well, but if you sell it cheap, you can't profitably put the extra work in to make it a really nice install, which doesn't necessarily even take that much longer. But if you've got a small medium sized company and you would actually like to grow and you'd like to see better installs become the norm in the HVAC industry, because they are not. It's a Jim Bergman of MeasureQuick. He gave a bunch of their data over to NIST, one of the national labs, and I forget the exact number, but it was 91 or 92% of residential HVAC installs have a detectable fault, meaning there's a significant install defect with that system. So over 90% of systems are not installed well. That could be a whole bunch of different factors, but still, that means that the average install sucks, and that's a shame. And also, not only do we have the economic climate that we're coming into, but as we move to SEER 2, and we're running higher SEER equipment, we're running EC and X13 motors, equipment that we used to be able to get away with pretty bad installs, and they would survive, they don't survive anymore. So you're going to get a lot of callbacks on those systems, and it's going to eat you alive if you aren't careful. There's one big company I've heard of, their new install callback rate is 34%.
Whoa.
You can't make money long-term doing it that way. Plus, you are nuking goodwill. If 34% of people are calling, I'd bet that there's another 10 or 20% that aren't. They're just like, oh, well, I guess this is just as good as we can expect. It might even be higher than that. So those installs suck. So if you would like to, as we call it, take back HVAC, come back to where we're pleasing customers and we're installing things well and doing that scalably, you are definitely a good candidate for 2.0.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. That's crazy. 91% are,
isn't it?
Installed. Anybody with a 91% failure rate like that, you don't stay in business very long. Like you said, the callback rate being 34%, which I think is interesting. It's like let's just say 91 is 100%. That's like only a third of your people are actually even bringing up anything, right? So it's like getting to a place of, you know, potential failure. And I think, you know, like you said, nuking goodwill, something I was talking about on an earlier podcast, is just like, you know, understanding the importance of, you know, doing these little things like installing a proper system that breeds goodwill for longer, by, you know, on the front end, you know, initially building a different type of relationship with people. And not, because that's the other thing too, is like, you, the person doesn't have to call you back like too many times before they go, clearly whatever they installed, or however they installed it, or however they're servicing it, is just not working. That, yeah, you got the install business, but you are not going to get the next install business, and you are most likely not going to get the long-term service business. So in a way, you're really, you're burning and you're torching, you know, not only the opportunity to serve that client, but also your reputation, because they're not going to refer you, because they're like, you know, their friend or family member goes, hey, who'd you guys use to install your system? I know you got it recently. And you go, oh, we use, so, you know, Acme HVAC. And it's like, oh, cool. Like, would you recommend them? Absolutely not. They've been out three more times since they installed the new system to fix it. It's like, yeah. Oh, well, you know, most people want it to be like a new car, right? You get a new car, and, you know, outside of the oil changes, you shouldn't have to do anything for at least the first 90,000 miles or 120, right? Like, that's the expectation of today's consumer, is like, I want it once and I don't want to deal with it, right? So the importance of making sure that what you're providing, you know, creates that ability to not be coming out because something's broken, but instead just doing regular maintenance to make sure that you're maintaining a system that's going to last, you know, 15, 20 years, right? So I like that. I think it's important, right? If you're going to build that reputation in, and, you know, I think that in of itself should be the impetus to start moving in this direction, because if you're not, you're slowly lighting on fire your customer base, right? And you have to think about, why wouldn't you want to be ahead of the curve when other people are fleeing the other, you know, competitors in your area, in your space, right? Because they're having bad experiences. Why wouldn't you want to be that refuge, that place that people go? Because they're like, hey, these guys do it differently and all that kind of stuff. And again, it's not to say that we're in our industry, we're trying to, you know, undermine our competitors or whatever, right? But we're thinking holistically and globally about our industry and making sure that it stands the test of time, and that, you know, hopefully these unscrupulous, you know, business owners and, you know, fly by night people that are coming in, you know, the chucks in the truck that are doing stuff, that they're slowly being weeded out because our whatever you want to call it, our foundation is so strong, that it's easy to find a customer. So with that, Nate, you had mentioned, and this is maybe how we'll kind of wrap things up, you'd mentioned that you kind of take people down this process, and they can either be a free quote or they can be a comfort consult, right? So are you saying that a business, as they're transitioning, because my question really is, hey, what's the evolutionary process of a business shifting from HVAC 1.0 to HVAC 2.0, and like, how long does that take? But it seems like what you're telling me is that it's not like an all or nothing thing. It's that you still can provide them the two options of kind of going the HVAC 1.0 route, free quote, right? Or the HVAC 2.0 route, comfort consult. And in a way there, you're bridging the gap, and you're also giving the customer options to participate in two radically different types of approach to solving their problem. Is that a fair assessment of the framework that you're providing? And because to me, that really lowers the barrier to entry for a lot of, you know, HVAC owners, because now they can just add something to the offerings that they're providing, as opposed to feeling like they've got to like totally shed this whole like culture, you know, this, you know, pre or whatever you want to call it, pre HVAC 2.0 culture. Would you say that's a fair assessment? Is that what, I mean, what is that evolutionary process looks like, so that a business owner, you know, that our listeners can essentially think to themselves, hey, yeah, okay, what is this? If I'm putting this into action, what does this process look like as I'm evolving my business?
Now, there's one big piece at the beginning, which is you change out what your intake process is, because you need that. Okay. So, well, there's actually two sets of questions. Kind of, there's one that we haven't fully built in yet that we call the one question, which is, okay, are you hoping that your new system does anything different than your current one does?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And some people are going to say no. Okay, free quote it is. But if they do say something different, you want to begin to understand what they would like it to do different. And the four questions can help on that. But the four questions, they're just slider scales. So you can put that on your website and it will collect the information from the client. And then what their scores are. And then it also gives them some educational videos on, okay, so here's what a free quote does. Here's what a comfort consult does. Here's why duct pressure matters now when it didn't before, because it didn't used to matter with PSC motors. Here's the six functions of HVAC. So here's how your car works. You can turn the temperature up or down a little bit. You got different fan speeds. You've got fresh air that you can bring in. It's got a good filter on it. There's all of these things that your car can do that your house can't. And when you start to make people aware of those things, now they've chosen their path for one, and they've gotten some basic education as well. And then the free quote also sets them up so that it shows them, here's how you can get the six functions of HVAC with different systems and different installs. So it ties everything together for them. And if they want basic, it's still on there. They can do it. Yeah. But fundamentally, the shift that has to happen is really just an intake one. That's the first step. Yep. And the free quote doesn't really require a mindset shift per se. Getting to the comfort consults, you do really have to shift yourself from wanting to be the hero to being the guide for the clients. Because to responsibly avoid responsibility, you've got to do things in a specific order. To be able to do that. But for the free quotes, it's not there. So where for a long time, the bar for figuring it out and using the system has been very high. Now, like you said, it's not a big deal. Change out your intake, make some adjustments with your techs, make some adjustments with your CSRs. And it's literally a script that you follow for the free quote. So we've been trying to design this for lowest common denominator. So you can be completely new to the industry and still succeed with it.
Love it. Love it. Well, thank you, Nate. I appreciate your insight into this whole new world of HVAC 2.0. I'm sure nobody thought that there was an HVAC 1.0. They just sort of figured that the HVAC industry is the HVAC industry is the HVAC industry, right? And so I appreciate you kind of letting us know about this. If people want to learn more about HVAC 2.0, they want to learn more about this framework, maybe they want to take a look at this, the software that you're building, like what's maybe the best way to kind of plug in, start to educate themselves, and then maybe ultimately kind of reach out to you and see if you can be kind of assistance as they make this evolution in their business.
So I'll just start with my email. That's really easy. It's nate@hvac20.com. Can't put the point in there. you could, but it'd be dumb. You can reach out to me, nate@hvac20.com. And also hvac20.com is a good place to go look. So I am now working on, as the software is finally getting stable, which is always a pain in the butt. I'm working on training videos right now. So you'll be able to sign up for some easy training stuff. And you can also just sign yourself up for an account at hvac20.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks, Nate. And then any other educational resources, YouTube channel or anything, podcasts that you're doing that might be helpful for people to just kind of like maybe let this percolate for a little bit, while they're on the road?
100%. So we do a weekly show Monday nights, a couple of hours. So 8:15 Eastern. And we're typically on the nerdy side for that. So it's a mixture of technical and sales. As my friend Gil Cavey of HVAC Uncensored calls it, he doesn't say it's sales, it's communications, which is correct. Communications and education. That's there. And also natethehousewhisperer.com. That's more of our consumer-facing brand. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a book called The Home Comfort Book, which gives you a building science 101 so that you can understand holistically how a house works. And that may be of use. And a lot of it is available for free download.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you, Nate. I appreciate you being on, sharing your insight and this evolutionary next step for our industry, which I think is just, it's going to be awesome. I know we've talked a lot about, you know, how do we scale this? And it really comes down to, you know, other HVAC contractors just getting on board with this sort of mindset shift. And like you said, it doesn't need to happen overnight. It can be something that you kind of work your way and your team into, especially if you're in that small to medium-sized business range. And so we hope that people will kind of open their mind and start to kind of take some steps in that direction, because we want to see our industry succeed and evolve and stay relevant, and not, like you said, nuke goodwill in the process. And so we thank you guys for listening today. Hopefully you got some great insights out of what Nate shared. As always, we're trying to bring you industry experts to kind of give you a new spin, a new angle, a new perspective on our industry and how you can continue to improve your contracting business and just make sure that our industry as a whole is elevating itself. As always, if you've enjoyed what you've heard, hit that like button, subscribe, turn those notifications on, and really, if you're really willing to go that extra mile, a review on our podcast really helps the exposure of that get out. Again, this is for you guys and making sure that we're serving you guys, helping you to continue to do your best out there in the field. So thanks again, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Take care.